Did Jesus really declare all foods clean? Hello, and welcome to Probe. This quarter, our discussion has focused on the Gospel according to Mark. Our lesson this week deals with a section of Scripture in Mark chapter 6 through chapter 7, verse 23, and it's entitled Confrontation in Galilee. My name is Paul Dibdahl, and I'm joined this week by Dr. Bruce Johansson, New Testament professor at Walla Walla College and a frequent participant on this program, as well as John Dibdahl, a former professor in the School of Theology at Walla Walla College, who now serves as president of the college. I'm glad that both of you can be here today.
Nice to be back again.
Thank you for the invitation.
This week, as I mentioned in the introduction, we're talking about, it's a rather long portion in Mark chapter 6, all the way through to chapter 7, verse 23. Here at the beginning of chapter 6, we have Jesus returning back home. And he's accompanied by his disciples, and he begins to teach in the synagogue. Mark hasn't told us about Jesus' birth or his early years. And here he is back home, and I guess I would think that people would receive him, would be open and so forth, but Jesus receives a very different reaction. What happens, and why do you think he received this reaction when he came back home?
Familiarity breeds contempt.
Yeah, that was the same thing that came to my mind.
A prophet is not without honor except in his own country. That's the phrase that comes to my mind. You know, it's probably hardest to appreciate a person who maybe you've known ever since they were real small, and you may picture them as they were when you first met them and forget that they may have grown up and matured. And that's a very human kind of explanation, but it doesn't really tell us too much more than that here. Not only that, they knew his family. And they seem like they must have been regular people. So who does this guy think he is?
don't we have the idea, though, that Jesus in his early years, you know, that he was just a wonderful child, and that as he worked in the carpenter shop, that he was just the best carpenter ever, and that, you know, that people, that he was the kind of person people would have looked at and said, wow, we expect something fantastic from this from this man. And yet, it seems like it's just the opposite when he comes home. They say, look, he's just a common ordinary. We know who he is. We know his family.
Yeah. What's really, and then at the end of this thing, Jesus is amazed at their unbelief. I wondered about that until I began to look at the whole story the way it's told here. You have Jesus stilling the storm. You have him. He has power over nature. He has power over demoniacs. He has power over death. In the story right before, he has brought to life somebody who had died. That had to have gone around. His hometown couldn't be ignorant of all of that. Those were amazing things.
Yeah. And yet when he comes home, Jesus himself is amazed at their unbelief.
Yeah.
Any lessons for us today?
Well, and that's even in the story, they're amazed at his teaching. So not only has he done these things, and they heard the reports, they're amazed at his teaching, but they said, where did he get this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
It couldn't be possible.
The familiarity he gets in the way.
Yeah.
So you had pride getting in the way with the Pharisees. You had monetary greed getting in the way for the Gadarene people.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have familiarity getting in the way for hometown bodies.
I never thought of it that way, yeah. Okay, what? Was it possible, this is not perhaps a crucial question, but we talked about Jesus being amazed at their unbelief. Mm-hmm. Jesus was surprised at things then.
Yeah.
The Gospels seem to say that.
He could be shocked at
if he could
people.
Be a simple boy that they can't understand where he got all this from, then he is also somebody who could be surprised.
Okay.
I like that.
Okay. Jesus sends out the 12. Yeah, good. Good.
He was one of us.
Very good.
And maybe that very thought made it hard for them to
exactly. Right, so this goes round and round.
It cuts both ways.
Yes.
Okay. Jesus sends out the 12 here in chapter 6 as well, and it's been meaningful to me that among these 12 would be Judas Iscariot. And yet, apparently, even to him, Jesus gives authority over the evil spirits.
Mm-hmm.
I asked this question once already. I'll ask it again. Any lessons for us in this today? Kind of any sermon that we could preach here in a sentence or two?
I think God can use all kinds of people. I think that is something that never ceases to amaze us.
Well, and I think, too, that a lot of people have the perception that you have to be perfect to be able to minister to other people with the power of Christ. And that's certainly not true of the apostles, that their commitment to Jesus did not ensure moral perfection and did not seem to disqualify them from ministry.
Yeah.
And that's encouraging. And at the same time, I think an example of God's grace in using people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's encouraging to me because, I'm far from perfect myself, but I hope I can still be used.
Yeah. We have here also the feeding of the 5,000, which I don't know, for me in my background, I didn't see that as... it was a neat miracle, but not maybe as exciting as some of the other miracles that we've talked about, or maybe the raising of someone from the dead. And yet, this is the only miracle performed by Jesus which appears in all four of the Gospels.
That's correct, yeah.
What is it that's significant? Why would each one of the gospel writers, not just the synoptics, but John as well, have felt that there must be something in this story that is important, very important even, that it be included by all four? What might that be? And yeah, it's a very broad question.
I don't know. One thing that is interesting about this story is, if we go back, to me it's a continuation of something that Jesus has been doing, but this story makes it even clearer than some of the others. It's a teaching opportunity for the disciples.
Yeah.
Because right in the middle of this here, they come and they say, send them away, send them into the country and villages round about to buy something to eat. And I love Jesus' statement to them, you give them something
yes,
to eat.
Startling, isn't it?
Startling. And boom. And so they say, well, do we take money and go buy it? What do we do? And Jesus says, hey, no, well, what do you got? I can use what we have here to do something marvelous with. And you go clear back to the calling of the disciples in Mark chapter 3, and the first call is to be with him. It says, Jesus called, Jesus chose whom he desired, and they came to him, and he appointed 12 to be with him and to be sent out to preach and to cast out demons. So if you look, Jesus takes that seriously all the way through here. This is just another example. Everything he does, they're there.
Mm-hmm.
You don't find him doing solitary miracles. They're there. And this one is a particularly crucial place where he uses it to teach those guys a lesson about who he is. And I think there's one other thing, too. I think it's very important. Wasn't it a strong, Bruce could probably say more about this than I could, wasn't it a fairly strong tradition in Judaism that the Messiah would feed? that there would be food. And so as symbolic, we're leading up to, and in a couple chapters we'll be there where we're asking who Jesus is.
Yeah.
And so I think this is a crucial step in establishing who Jesus is and a crucial step in the lessons of the disciples and what they're supposed to learn.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's Deuteronomy 18 where Moses says, God will raise up a prophet. And he'll be like Moses, and you should hear him.
Mm.
That was a text that every Jew was aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all kinds of allusions. You got the 12 apostles who are chosen. There's 12 of them. And when this thing is over, there are 12 baskets full.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Moses fed the Israelites with miraculous food in uh-huh. the wilderness.
Manna.
And so there's overtones. Matthew right. makes more out of this, I think, than Mark does. But it's nevertheless, it's here.
Yeah.
But this is also very much a commissioning thing, too. You can use my power to turn wonderful things out of very, very ordinary things. And when you're done, there'll be 12 baskets full.
Yeah, yeah.
God will bless you.
Right.
You just need to get out and do something.
Yeah. Now, we're talking about food and Jesus providing food. There's an interesting and, for some people, a disturbing passage here in Mark chapter 7, dealing with clean and unclean foods. At least it appears to be, the issue appears to be clean and unclean foods. And Jesus makes a statement there about that it's not what we take in which makes us unclean, but what comes out mm-hmm. of us. Mm-hmm. And then Mark includes this the statement. It's in verse, what is it? Verse
19.
19. Mm-hmm. In saying this, Jesus declared all foods clean. What are we to make of that? Distinctions between clean and unclean foods, eat everything. How should we look at this?
The whole context starts off with eating with unwashed hands and the kind of ritual defilement that's involved in that. And, you know, eating food is also something that Jews were very careful about, mm-hmm. especially in a church where you had Jews. If we're thinking about Mark writing for Roman Christians, possibly, mm-hmm. besides the wider world, sitting down and sharing food together from Jewish background and from Gentile backgrounds, it was one of the biggest issues that Paul had to deal with that split really the Christian, earliest mm-hmm. Christian church. And I think this is another way, this is talking about ritual uncleanness. I don't think this is about health. And all of this kind of stuff got in the way of fellowship.
Okay.
It meant you couldn't associate with so-and-so and so-and-so.
All right. Well, and I think it muddied the issue, too. It made what we would call kind of a ceremonial issue on a par with moral issues.
Yeah,
and here
exactly.
the thing is that, you know, don't worry about what goes into the stomach because it's these moral issues
mm-hmm.
that are issues. So it's not talking, as Bruce said, I agree, it's not talking about health. It's talking about the ceremonial use of clean and unclean food, making that an issue which disrupted fellowship and making that issue important rather than the moral issues which really were crucial
that's
to
right.
society.
That's right.
And that's what Jesus says, and maybe we'll end here with his words. What comes out of a man is what makes him unclean. For from within, out of men's hearts, come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance, and folly. Those are issues
yeah.
that we all deal with, and those are more important issues, I suppose, than what comes into our mouth, as important as that may be.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us, John and Bruce. Thank you to Susan Michael, our production director. And finally, thank you for listening in. For Probe, I'm Paul Dibdahl.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194 or email us at probe@wwc.edu. Thanks for listening. We'll be here next week at this time with Probe.